Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Welcome to Masonic Effects. As the boys around here are prone to saying, she's a cold one. I'm looking out at deep snow. Yes, wherever you are, wherever you're tuning in, this is that postcard that you see at the stand. Everything covered in the and this cleansing sense, the sun is just struggling to come through that, the gray that covers us for a long time. It's winter here in Canada. Can you imagine it would be cold in winter? No, we can't complain about it. You make of it what you can. It's great. I come from a little island off the coast of Canada, and it's just something that you endure and get through it and move on. It's nature. It's natural, and so are we. How are you, everyone? I'm glad that you've pulled a chair up to the table, or you're leaning back in your recliner, or you're sitting with a cup of tea. Or as we get into the show later, you might have a dram because we have Robbie Burns Day coming up, and it's a day particularly in my cultural background and genetic background, being a Graham and all that clan stuff, that has significance because, and we'll talk about the because a bit later. But what's been striking is the vitality. I'm just becoming over the past couple of days looking around, and nothing really is surprising. The news isn't really the news. It's like I don't need to, I don't get any thrill driving past a car accident, seeing, you know, the suffering of somebody else doesn't make me feel lucky. I'm subject to the fates the same way you are. And yet that doesn't define me. I just move on. And in the meantime, rather than becoming impatient with the crowd that has to leer and lurk, I choose to use the time to myself. I can have access to, you know, not too long ago, I've discovered this composer, Bruckner. Does the guy like an entrance, eh? This, if you are interested in epic level horns, just go and look at Bruckner. Try even start with his first symphony. Ooh, I don't know whether you could put this on and have this greet you every morning when your feet hit the floor. Oh, what an entrance. Just amazing. So, you know, if you want to be transcendent, what takes you away from the moment and just elevates it? It's like, this is these circumstances that I can't control around me are moments too that can also trigger and inspire, trigger beautiful notions. As the truth, you know, what else are you going to do with your time? It's easy for me to sit here on this kind of day and tell you all of these things. Ha ha ha! I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know. Here, I dug into a bit of a Manly Hall. You know, Hall, the guy with it. I believe he was born a Canadian, which kind of makes me feel good. But he's an odd character because of the way he was writing from such an early age. This is an inspired mind, my goodness. As he says here, just a chapter on the ancient mysteries and secret societies. You don't mind with all of the things going on in the world. The despots are doing what despots do. Capitalism is feeding on the poor as it does. And the solution during elections is to start a fight so you can pump yourself up and say, my goodness, we are all magnificent. Mm. And then you come along in balance and say, my goodness, I don't expect everybody to be understanding like that. Is this the defining hope of humanity? Are we just going to continue to, well, the oxygen is getting thinner and thinner and thinner and the water is getting more difficult for our children to digest? Are we just going to wail away at each other? Are we just going to find, probably, it's the possibility that as tensions grow and stresses grow, that the weaknesses not so much in systems, but those systems are made up of these little widgets called human beings. The weaknesses are going to show. The fault lines are going to show. If we begin, it's not only, there's no declaration here. It's helpful to begin to see purpose and commonality in the world. Here, let me see what you think. It is a problem. As Hall says here, and we're reaching into the subject, and you can begin to see his thinking form, the ancient mysteries and secret societies. Do you mind? No, okay. When confronted with a problem involving the use of reasoning faculties, individuals of strong intellect keep their poise and seek to reach a solution by obtaining facts bearing upon the question. Those of immature mentality, on the other hand, when similarly confronted, are overwhelmed. While the former may be qualified to solve the riddle of their own destiny, the latter must be led like a flock of sheep and taught in simple language. They depend almost entirely upon the ministrations of the shepherd. The Apostle Paul said that these little ones must be fed with milk, but that meat is the food of strong men. Thoughtlessness is almost synonymous with childishness, while thoughtfulness is symbolic of maturity. There are, however, but few mature minds in the world, and thus it was that the philosophic religious doctrines of the pagans were divided to meet the needs of those two fundamental groups of human intellect, one philosophic, the other incapable of appreciating the deeper mysteries of life. To the discerning few were revealed the esoteric or spiritual teachings, while the unqualified many received only the literal or exoteric interpretations. In order to make simple the great truths of nature and the abstract principles of natural law, the vital forces of the universe were personified, becoming the gods and goddesses of the ancient mythologies. And while the ignorant multitudes brought their offerings to the altars of Priapus and Pan, deities representing the procreative energies. The wise recognized in these marble statues only symbolic concretions of great abstract truths. He caught it, didn't he? He caught it. He caught it. What do we do with this? What do we do with it? That kind of information, I think, is more descriptive. It's more of an acknowledgement. And will there be other people who will push back? Yeah, absolutely, of course. There always will be. But it's an acknowledgement for people that make those observations. He calls them sheep. I haven't found a word that I can live with about describing that, because doesn't this border on elitist thinking? You know, I don't have the answers. You'll have to help me with that. And help me. It's not that easy, because if we start off with the sense of superiority in mind, that you're going to dominate me, well, of course, you win. If it's win-lose, a long time ago, I realized that it was senseless talking to somebody that's not interested. Why bother? It's immediately, but it's different if you're there to offer some kind of assistance and a leg up or an inspiration or idea. Then the question is how to help an individual who is wary, is suspicious, is cautious, is anxious, and is using all of their natural defenses, you know, all of their natural abilities. Because what you and I are doing, what Hall is doing here, is dissonant. It's a contradiction. Like, where am I? Well, nobody wants to be in that crowd of selfish, thoughtless immaturity. Nobody wants to be there. But a thoughtful man will say, my goodness, he will reflect and say, some things about me are immature. And does an intelligent man need to be reinforced saying, you know, there you go. Being intelligent is an asset. Well, thank you, but you know what's your point? I don't know who's reading this stuff or how they use it, but it helps as touchstones, and it defines. If you're going down this kind of a path, then there's, I think, it changes expectations that not. That every problem in the world has a solution because I conjure up the problem. No, sometimes its problems are severe and we have to wrestle with them for a great, great long time. Look at what's going on with quantum theory. How far back can we trace those arguments in different forms, one leading to the other? Connections, huh? Well, and it's pushed a group of scientists to put together this machine and send it out to is it L2, where it will look back in time, the space telescope, the James Webber Space Telescope, looking back in time. We have this concept that all this light that's coming at us started somewhere. Well, somebody asked that. Now, I think it was a Greek, wasn't it, that wrote about it, but I'm not sure that it wasn't some illiterate, what we would call illiterate peasant lying on his back one night looking up there and saying, is that a reflection or is that generating? Is that the sun, you know, this big, huge nuclear reactor that's generating light? And that's a long way off. What if it is everything out there just those small little dots of light, or is it just so far away it appears to be this little dot of light? And you go from that to some bright kid wondering about light acting like a wave. How do we know? Well, we test it. And then somebody comes along and says, but I've tested it, and it is a wave, but it acts like a particle sometimes. And then we know it's both. Oh, defines reason, doesn't it, when we have those simple, nice, convenient answers, and then they're challenged. They have some context, some depth. So we understand science in a way. It's always going on around us, and we benefit from it when we can, when somebody notices that. If we tinker with this part of RNA, we can re-engineer, we can trigger the body to do some really interesting things that it needs to protect itself. mRNA, messaging. So we just send the material that we need, we'll send it in on a virus. Hey, how about that? And it'll spread and do what viruses do, but it's altered. We're controlling it. Little journeys, little maps to our brain. And now we've figured out the brain blood barrier. And we have to be very careful with that. But we figured it out. Clever. The mathematicians said that they're so we're so we owe. Who do we owe? Ourselves or nature for showing us some consistencies? And there's some trust. You can trust mathematics, can't you? Well, even when you're coming up with, it's like trusting humanity. There's a confusion or perfection. The people with OCD aren't going to be very happy with this part, but the imperfection is part of the perfection. It's that randomness, the chaos, you know, the yin-yang. You look at that swirly little line in that black-white circle, and there you have that you'll see a little dot. Those different forces, and there's and that dot, that point, that punctuation indicates chaos. My goodness. So in the calculations, there's a randomness, and we can tell. So it's like saying, well, the only constant in the world is inconsistency. Well, yeah, but are there implications from that? Well, yeah. Look at the likes of you and I and everybody else around us. There's implications. But how it applies is how we apply it, yeah, in a given day. And do we have too many ideas coming at us? So all of a sudden, I'm going to just determine that I'm old. I have too much information, draw a line. And from here on, I'm just going to be a matter of thinking, a matter of opinion. No, not going to react anymore to new information coming in. It's just from this point on, it's just opinion. And by the way, I'm always right in my opinion. And who are you to say? Well, childishness, huh? Might as well have a temper tantrum and go and roll around on the floor like a fool. And an old man my age going around having temper tantrums is no thing you want to see. Oh, no. No. You have to pretend it didn't happen. Yeah, what follows is violence. Don't tell Auntie she's obese. My goodness, don't do that. Be polite. Lie. Little white lies. Yeah, that's how it starts, eh? So we come along here with I like to think of it as an orthodoxy or way of thinking. And like any other way of thinking, if we're foolish about it, then the results will be accordingly. Thank you. I'm going to join me here. When a life's little, I'm sipping a cappuccino. Life's little pleasure, indulgences. The world around us is not closing in. Our understanding of it is that things are expanding, but I can't begin to tell you that I understand. I truly understand how the center is everywhere and it's expanding. Like trying to conceive of this is, I need help, boys and girls. My goodness, I'm not. what we make of it. You know, if let's sit around the circle 5,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, and listen to our sages, our priestesses, tell us about purpose and existence and nature and our connection, and give us this sense of meaning. And we today think everybody was in awe. We're looking up at the eclipse, and it was enthralling, and everybody had a sense of awe. But I'm sure there were people like you and I there that just went about their business. Yeah. Kill me if you want. I've got sheep to shear, or I've got crop to put in, or water to hump up the hill. Get on with it. People that just were still focused on their duty or what they had to do that day. Or my baby is sick and I have no time for your scientific foolishness. And you go and sit. We'll get one. Who goes and sits under the tree? Well, it was made important, wasn't it? So it became an in-group, out-group. Only in some groups, we said, if you want in, if you go through these processes, if you make offerings of a particular type, then that will demonstrate to us that you are serious and that you are worthy. And then you can enter these inner circles. And you one day might sit inside the stone circle with us. But you say, needs to be under the wolf moon, the first full moon in January. Okay, so we'll do that. And that only comes around once a year. So how many of those do we need before somebody says, oh, my goodness, you know, have you noticed? You know, there's a time when the sun is going down and down and down and down and down, and light is shorter and shorter, and then it comes back. No, you don't say, well, yeah, watch. Well, where's your proof? Well, next year. Yeah, but it's overcast. Well, the year after, and the year after, and it's always the same. Oh, it's always the same. But that doesn't fit with the manifestations, the gods and goddesses. Well, there you have it. How do the gods and goddesses explain it? Well, you have myths that explain it. Myths. That this earth is up there and it's floating in a sea of gold, liquid gold, yeah. Or we ride on the back of a turtle, yeah. The display of the human imagination, hindsight, it's just wonderful. And if you say, I don't want to accept your reality, I want to accept my own, well, I understand that, but move along. Nothing to see here, move along. There are new ideas happening always, and we have, if you've declared that you're beyond your capacity, well, here's a little news flash. The math, it just tells us that you're wrong. you have a capacity far, far greater than our imagination can determine. And why do we say that? Because the more, if we say that, we can find evidence of it. And the more we do this, the more we probe, we may be sending these, we are sending these machines to space to go back further and further in time to what are we? The universe is 13.5 billion years old. And what's Earth about? Are we 3.5 billion years old? And you and I are on this planet for what, 300,000 years, you know, give or take, with a creature crawling around. The knowledge has never stopped. The observations have never stopped. Consistency and disagreement, yeah, it's always there. That's how we do it. and the thinking behind it. What does this information tell us? Well, that's been conjecture. But you and I, 21st century, have the benefit of a lot of the work that was done by clever people before. If we now, do we want an opinion about their work, or do we need to form our own opinion? And you can understand that. Years ago, I was studying sociology, and I was reading English translations of Hegel and some other heavyweights. And I had this sense that I needed to learn German in order to do the translations myself, because I was reading translations and they weren't matching up. Well, settle down, hysterical boy. There's no need to do that. You can if you choose, but my purpose was elsewhere. The translations of Ulysses. It matters, and as they go on, they become more accurate because we can compare them, just like you do, with a good glass, a cup of tea, or a glass of wine, or a scotch. We compare. Better and best. It makes us happy to do that. We like best and we like better. And because if something is draggy, it gives us an opportunity to improve on it. So we don't seem to have this sense of settling, do we? You look around and we're still not drawing water from buckets. Thank goodness we had these Germanic tribes that just helped set up communities in a different way with far more sense. We could trace that back to Romans and the Celts and how far back, and look at and examine the contributions made, and so do you. You make a contribution. Hard to see it when we're living floating in this universe, when you and I think of ourselves more like that tiny, tiny, insignificant speck of light. Here, we'll cleanse our souls and our thinking with some teachings of Pythagoras, that everything is mathematics, including music. Ah, Earl Hines. Yep. I was listening to Miles Davis talk about influences in his life. So the music is going to continue on with those influences. Earl Hines, there'll never be another you. What do you think? You can see the influence, eh? Earl Hines. As I was writing, I was being reminded of this type of conversation, and I was thinking about how odd it seems, sort of against the odds that we've been and then when I say it just sounds ridiculous. Men have been sitting around in small groups having thoughtful discussions, and other men have been trying to define what they do. Oh my God, have you ever? I remember years and years and years ago, I was at this big concert, lots of music going on, beautiful. Never been done like back in the late 60s. Complete, it seemed like it just something beautiful got out of hand. And yet what was going on that was really odd, and it was an eye-opener, were listening to other people talk about the news reports describing what we were experiencing. And how often they got it wrong. It's like that's just complete bullshit, what they were saying. And even for the reptilian mind at the time, it was an eye-opener. Like, really, your experience is important, and if you're looking for bad, you'll always find it. And so be careful. If you're looking for the worst in people, you will always find that. And then you think about it, if you're looking for the fool, you'll find them. But the fool has a freedom that the cautious man doesn't, the clerk working in the office with his calculator and pen doesn't have that potential to explore. And so, oh my goodness, it takes a fool to do that for us. And that brought me to this statement here. I've been thinking about some work I did back in the late 70s and early 80s. And here, see what you think of this and tell me, I need help, my goodness, since the 60s. I'm never sure if it is humility that makes us appreciate and value honesty, but I am sure it isn't a commodity. Like, music isn't just mathematics, but an effect, frison. Packaged in our work is what the ancient Greeks talk about, trials that require great courage, heroics, unmatched proof of the gods. Our brotherhood seems predicated on a story about a guy we've never met, but that we may know intimately. Hiram the Biff. We come into his life at this sensational conclusion to underscore lessons. What they are may not be as interesting as wondering why the lessons cannot be applied uniformly or why men cannot absorb them passively. There is a natural mistrust of truth. For thousands of years, we held belief as the source of all truth, physical and metaphysical. Unprovable faith explained our total existence. We lived in awe of such power. But like any power unquestioned, it became overbearing. Our writers poured their talents into metaphors so we would remember a source or a lesson that was implausible to us in our natural state and, according to the popular thinking of the day, needed implausible explanations. Burning bush, wisdom carved into clay tablets, plausibility was unceded territory. And then came observation that told a different story and an understanding that learning and knowledge was within the capability of all humanity. In retrospect, people began communicating sensibility over great distances. Not just any people, but people who understood things. If only we were all receptive, but we were not. And so the world unfolded based on ability, merit. Merit? What you knew or didn't know had nothing to do with the manipulation and everything to do with ability. No sooner was this out of our mouth that when we realized there were powers, manipulation to promote their own ends. Powers to worry about. And no sooner did philosophy form an ethical existence than science became its foot soldier. You see, all of this has happened on the day I met Hiram. Huh. Was he nuts, you know? Was he crazy? What's he doing? Three idiots giving back to somebody that's armed and threatening and demanding, you know, a cheat, a liar. Well, thank you. Whoever came up with the idea of Hiram, thank you. And put it into our ritual, absolutely. You gave us integrity. Yeah, Hiram, you know, symbolically, he was ready to die. It's as if saying there's nothing more important than integrity. Well, there's a few other things that fit that list of nothing more important. Honesty, happiness, loyalty, you know. But integrity, poof. It's as if they were reading our times. Yeah, do you sell your integrity? Is how flexible is your sense of ethic? Well, politics, yeah? Yeah. Careful. Careful. You meet Hiram, and if you think about it, he's more than just an idiot that had to be done away with. He was making a point. And did he have a point in hindsight? Yep. Yep. How many years, how many hundreds of years? This wasn't the notion that Hiram was a latter-day kind of a development. But it fit. It was made, it was enriched because the people that needed it were no fools. We weren't talking about people just scraping. It wasn't about their hourly wage or how they made a living or their level of education. It was about their intelligence and about the development and schooling of those that intelligence. And for that, we know it's up to you. Yep. Don't blame it on people that have drive and accomplishment. No. This is each one of us. Mm-hmm. It's up to us. Dexter Gordon, I'm a fool to want you. You could say that about Hiram. Thank you. That do it for you. Yeah, Dexter Gordon. I'm a fool to want you. Freddie Hubbard, Barry Harris, Bob Crenshaw, Billy Higgins. Just talent, huh? Just talent. I'm going to talk about a poem that comes around and a writer and a poet that's celebrated by a culture that celebrates its poets, the Scots. And it comes around once a year. It's celebrated on the 25th of, he's celebrated on the 25th of January. Robbie Burns, of course, Robert Burns. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to do this. This was a guy who was advised not to write his poetry in the common language that was used. Be a little more elite, you know, a little more polished. It won't be taken seriously if you write for the understanding of the common man. You write in Scots, but he did it anyway. And it was a bit of a dilettante, you know. He pushed back. He became known for his pushback on the mores of the mores of the day, the power of the church and social convention, the control, And he was whether we want to dissect his life and his ambitions, I think we can know him as a guy that was, you know, making his own way, in his own way. Now, his father worked like a dog in his life, and he died worn out and bankrupt. He was trying to make a go of it, always trying to improve his fortunes. And he was a farmer, started off, and things didn't go well. Well, you can imagine if you're dependent on the seasons, it doesn't take many back-to-back-to-back to ruin a man, to ruin a farm. It wasn't, you have to get over this maleness of history. We weren't there, boys weren't there alone, for goodness sakes. Was watching his father. We think, of course, the lesson watching this happen, his father worked like a dog. Why would you do that? Well, sign me up for that. You know, dad worked for a dog and he ended up just screwed. Sign me up. But he didn't. He pushed back. And he was a bitter satirist on religion and political thought. Because he said, you know, this is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this. You and I have these same thoughts today. And yeah, he received some formal training for the schooling for teacher, but it was sporadic. And he acquired a superficial reading knowledge of French and a bare smattering of Latin. So we conclude from all of that that he wasn't a stupid man. And he read the important bits. Like today, what would you read? Back then, he was reading the important 18th century English writers. And he was also reading, in the background, he was reading Shakespeare and Milton and Dryden. You know, it's like today you'd want to read just to have a sense of what that piece of history, intellectual and cultural history. His knowledge of Scottish literature was confined to his childhood, to orally transmitted folk songs and folk tales. Now, if you've come from a place where you've experienced Cayley around the kitchens in the farmhouse, you'll understand. And you can participate in those. It's not perhaps in somebody's farmhouse, but feeling that sense of the stories, somebody reading about the songs and the fiddler and the guitarist playing or the accordion playing about the scoundrels, you know. And it wasn't like, it wasn't a drogue. This is a party. Have a good time. Dance. Yes, dance. And the children were there too. It wasn't like you had and the old folks were there. It wasn't segregation. So it's like there was a modernization, 15th century poem was, you know, this was the kind of stuff that was being portrayed. So this is the guy that we know. He pushed back. It's not like, he could get away with it then. This was the Calvinist time, you know. The Calvinist, very extreme, you know, people like that really would go after him. Good Lord. Anyway, here, this is the kind of guy. After Queen Victoria and Christopher Columbus, Robert Burns has more statues dedicated to him around the world than any other non-religious figure. Bob Dylan said his greatest ever source of inspiration was Robbie Burns' The Red, Red Rose. J.D. Salinger, 1951 novel, The Catcher in the Rye, you know that, based its title on the Robbie Burns poem, Coming Through the Rye. The Australian town of Camperdown is believed to be the home of the oldest existing statue of Burns anywhere in the world. It was carved in 1830. The statue was shipped to Australia during the 1850s. He's known as a poet, but he actually wrote and collected almost double the amount of songs than poems. Auld Lang Syne is actually a song of friendship in China, known as Yu Ye Di Zui Tiang Chang, or Friendship Forever and Ever. The song is played at graduations and other formal gatherings. Nice to make a connection with China. John Steinbeck's 1937 novel of Mice and Men took its name from a line in Burns' poem To a Mouse. goes, the best laid schemes of mice and men gang aft agley. The city of Atlanta, Georgia, is the home of a life-size replica of Alloway Cottage that Burns was born in. It was built by the Burns Club of Atlanta in 1911. For a that and a that. Is there for honest poverty, also known as a man's a man for that, was chosen to open the new Scottish Parliament in 1999 due to its themes of equality and universal brotherhood. Auld Lang Syne is recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records as one of the top three most popular songs in the entire English language. And there's more. American fashion designer Tommy Hilfiger claims to be a direct descendant of Robbie Burns. In 2009, Robbie Burns became the first ever person to appear on a commemorative bottle of Coca-Cola. He had fans, Abraham Lincoln. I'll go on. Here. What's the big deal? Listen to this. Yeah.
There for honest poverty, that hangs heed and all that. The coward slave we passing by, we dare be poor for all that.
But all that and all that, our toil is obscure and all that. The rank is but the guinea stamp, the man's the gout for all that. For all that and all that, their pencil show and all that. The honest man, though erst he poor, is king in name for all that.
You see yon Birkie, called a lord, for struts and spears and all that. Though hundreds worship at his word, he's but a coof for all that.
For all that and all that, this ribbon star and all that, the man of independent mind, he looks and laughs at all that.
A prince can mark a belted knight, a marquis, duke, and all that. But an honest man's a boon his might, good faith. He mona for that.
Then let us pray that cometh may, as cometh will, for all that, that sense and worth, o'er all the earth, shall bear the gree and all that.
For all that, and all that, it's coming yet for all that, that man to man, the world o'er, shall brothers be for all that.
That was writers and actors, Scottish, of course, and political leaders, all quoting, reciting the poem. Not bad, eh? Not bad. Here.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of all unsigned? For all glad signs be in, for all lands time, we'll take a cup of kindness yet for all lands time. We twa here run up with the grace and put the gowans fine. We've won with many the weary fence since days of all that's fine. For all lands time, for all lands time, we'll tack a cup of kindness yet for all. And we twa hid out in the barn, the morning sun till dying, over the sea between us they may roar, since days of our sight. For all lands like dear, for all lands kind, we'll take a cup of kindness yet, for all lands kind. And there's a hand, my trusty fear, he's a hand of mine, and we'll tackle it good while we walk for all one side. For all one side, for all one side, we'll tackle God. For
know what I mean? Here's to you. To each and every one of you. Now we step into history. What a wonderful segue. Yeah. We left off with talking about some of the conflicts, the reaction, pushback. And this part of the history reminds us to be very, to take care about what we're defining as masonry. I know we have a big, you know, where I am, there's a concern that for relevance, but what we've been teaching, what we've been the way we've defined it has little to redeem it. So, you know, it's like a natural, and for me, it's a natural outcome. It makes sense. It's not like we're seeing a repudiation of the rawness of Freemasonry, of these incredibly important ideas and values. None of that. Because you know that there's a delicacy. You can't be handled by a ham-fisted bunch. There's a delicacy day by day. How do you go about reinforcing these themes over day by day without it becoming boring and tedious and task-like? Well, if you said to a painter or poets or actors, how would you do this? Would they ever shut up? Would they? Or even if you went to a room full of fools that didn't know they shouldn't have ideas, would they ever stop? It would just be endless, and that's what we need. That's at the end of it. We call that genius. How do you do that? How do you find inspiration? Oh well, I've never been inspired a day in my life, and of my age, I have this opinion. Blah blah blah. Well. Time to grow up, you petulant little rascal. It's like it's time to let your thinking mature just a little bit. Check this out here. See what I mean right off the hop. The Freemason, we're going to talk about you and I, brother. The Freemason does not count among his friends those who talk about humanity but do nothing for it. The goal of Masonic fraternizing is service to humanity. The results of this idealism are palpable. The world is becoming a better place, more perfect, enhanced by new knowledge, new discoveries, new arts and learning, for which the Freemasons are partly responsible. With this posture in the world, we avoid pedantry and quackery, cultural stance. The Freemasons believe that they serve the general welfare of the public. This was the rhetoric that Amsterdam Freemasons employed in 1752 to justify themselves against their detractors. They saw their sociability in civic terms. And clearly the lodges are intended to be far more than drinking clubs or centers for convivial conversation, although there were certainly those things as well. These justifications also show the seriousness with which the Dutch Freemasons regarded their organization. The dues they paid, which were not insubstantial, the monthly or even biweekly meetings, the many publications and elaborate records and rituals should attest to that seriousness of purpose. But so too, and most important, should the language they used about themselves. In their communications among themselves, Freemasons referred to their lodges as enlightened, their order as illustrious, and a master as venerable. They were being more than self-congratulatory. To be serious about the cultivation of virtue and civic duty or about progress toward human betterment is not quite the same as seriousness about one's own governance, about the nature of political organization. The Masonic impulse, as transmitted from Britain to the continent, might have been idealist, even utopian, solely about the joys of sociability or the possibility of human progress, without necessarily in this new setting encompassing a search for the ideal civil polity. But as we shall see, Dutch Freemasons took up that search. They concerned themselves with legitimacy in relation to the British Grand Lodge, as well as their own lodges, and not least with the search for the harmony that stands as the model for the true civic polity. Within the confines of the Dutch lodges, which were no different from the other lodges or Western Europe, proper governance, adherence to the Constitution, to legitimate authority, to rules of order as well as deportment, these often dominated the proceedings. And in this context, the political meant the organization and legitimacy of this private polity, its civic life, and within it, the living out and perfecting of a disciplined and improving social order. Thank you. Well, that was a handful, wasn't it? Here we are talking about equality through the poetry of Robbie Burns, and talking about meeting Hiram and the effect, expectations. And I hope it's unburdened you. This isn't an obligation. You don't have, if you're feeling guilty, welcome to the human race. Like, oh my goodness, you know, I've taken these obligations. I should be doing far more. Yeah, we all should. But come on, step it up. You have to laugh about it or you make yourself mad. It's like it never ends. So get some perspective. Getting some perspective on it, boys and girls. The masonry is all of that, plus this polity, plus the sociability, and it is. And as you'll hear more in our program next week, we're going to talk more about what this historian is revealing about that search for legitimacy. And isn't that just remarkable? Good place to end the program today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Turkey. Thank you, Iran. It's cool to have you sit in with us, brethren. And Australia, hope you're doing well. And I hope it's beautiful there wherever you are. Tip one for us here. And on the 25th, if you can think, have a kind thought for this Scottish boy, Robbie Burns, it would be deeply, deeply appreciated. So we'll talk to you all again real soon. Bye. Thank you. Bet you you're smiling. Cheers.